Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network, on the internet, broadcasting from two shipping containers outside Roberto's Pizza at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today's show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener and sponsored by TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network in the promotion of sustainable lifestyles. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in New York City and the surrounding area. And this show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. And today we're going to be talking about...
As in, you can lead a horse.
We knew that joke would come up sometime.
But you can't make her think.
That's right. But we can think. Yes, we can. And today we are talking about roof gardens and green roofs in the urban environment. And we have a special guest today, Curtis B. Wayne. And as many of you Heritage Radio Network fans know, Curtis is the host of Burning Down the House.
No, that's burning. We are burning down the house.
Okay, thank you for the correction.
On HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Thank you, Curtis.
All right. It's your show.
Yes. But feel free to interject. So it's a show about architecture that airs right here on HRN on Wednesdays at 7. Is that right,
Curtis?
That
is correct.
Okay, I got one
7
thing right.
7 Eastern time.
Okay,
right. Because we have listeners.
All over the world.
All from Latvia to Australia.
And Malaysia. We
all
have some.
Over.
Yeah. We love that.
Super, super. Yeah, well, that's the genius of being on the internet, that we are not limited to the radius of broadcast radio. We are planetary.
That's right. Good word.
Interplanetary.
Yeah. Yes.
But before all that, Curtis was a graduate of Cooper Union in New York City and Harvard Design School.
That is true.
You're not making that up?
Alas, no, you can check it out.
I haven't checked. I'm going to take your word for it.
Well, you can call up the registrar and they'll say, oh, yes.
Curtis B. Wayne. Oh, I hear he's got a radio program.
Him.
Blah, blah, blah.
So. No, let me tell you about my background. I not only have been a licensed architect in various states since 1979, during my collegiate years at Cooper Union, I worked at Terrestris, the indoor plant store
right.
on the rooftop on East 59th Street for Kent Hunter. And I learned all about ficuses and plants that die and why they die.
And
that
was that beautiful greenhouse that you could see when you came across the 59th Street Bridge.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And it was a wonderful place to live.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about plants before that. I know nothing about plants after that except some of the... the Latin names like marginata and
variegata.
Yeah, that there you go.
It's so sexy.
And Terrestris's claim to fame was indoor plants that survive,
mm-hmm.
because they had a plantation of some sort or other. Actually, the owner tried to recruit me to be the plantation manager on some key down in Florida.
In Florida, right.
But I was set to go to graduate school, and he said, oh, you can go to graduate school later, you can scuba. I trust you. You hang out, you make sure the shipments go in and they go out. If they had a plant that was sick because the tractor trailer loads were full of healthy plants going north, they would take back the sick plants, send them back to Florida, recondition them and repurpose them and sell them again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's. I don't think that would ever happen today. I know a little bit about the indoor industry.
I think it was a brilliant business model of how do you keep your trucks going, but
don't send a truck empty.
Yeah, but Terrestris seems to be long gone. I don't know what happened to that. I the fern bar thing of the 70s is faded. But today, as I understand, we want to talk about the perils of converting your roof to a green roof.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it's not just as easy as, oh, I have a roof.
Let me dump some soil on it and get going.
Yeah, let me put some dirt up there and grow a green roof mm-hmm. because you can't really do that. Now, I understand that you ladies are the wet blanket crew.
Because we're the ones that say you can't just do that. And you need to know a few things
yes,
about a few
yes.
things.
And that's why we wanted you on, Curtis, because we need to
Bring some sanity.
Bring some sanity. People, it's a buzzword now. And when I was thinking about the direction of the show, I was thinking, you know, New Yorkers pay on average $1,000 a square foot for living space.
Absolutely.
And that's why they're looking up and looking at all this wasted space, you know, where previously it was just, you know, wasted. Now they're like, okay, let's turn it into cabanas. Let's make it into an outdoor living room. They've asked us for all kinds of wacky and crazy things. And we wanted to...
movies.
Yeah, you know, movie screens, putting greens,
putting
you know,
greens.
Private and common. You know, every new condo has to outdo the other in what kind of amenities that they have. So
putting greens pretty easy because AstroTurf's kind of light.
Yeah, and you just need a net to capture that ball somebody whacking
it. But inviting your friends over, 50 or 100 of them on your roof, might be problematic.
Exactly.
And we can...
So tell us, what's the first steps, Curtis? Like, well, how do you go about it?
We need to understand that the New York City Building Code requires that roofs have to resist and carry the worst ordinary environmental load, which is an accumulation of snow. So any given roof of almost any building is designed to sustain over a prolonged period of time 30 pounds per square foot. Now, as you well know, but your listeners may well not know, 30 pounds per square foot of soil saturated by water is that's about 4 or 5 inches of depth per square foot. Which is a great idea. So some of your would-be clients might say, well, wait, we could have 4 or 5 inches up there, right? No.
And I want a pine tree.
Yeah. Well, here are some basic terms. You might hear about dead load. That's the weight of the structure itself. You don't have to worry about that. Then there's live load. Live load is snow load. It's people walking around. People walking around on your roof to watch a movie, their movable live loads takes a lot of people to add up to 30 pounds a square foot over the entire expanse of your roof. And they keep moving, you're not going to do damage because it's a short duration load. These days, we analyze loads over the duration of the load, and something like 4 or 5 inches of soil totally saturated with water is a long-term load, and it leads to long-term weakening of the structure. And even if you have soil on your roof, it doesn't mean it's not going to snow on top of it.
Exactly.
And what's worse is that soil is an insulator. And so the buildup, if we had another big blizzard, the buildup of snow and ice, which happens when the sun circles around and melts that snow and turns it into ice, which is a very heavy weight, and it could snow some more on top of it. It's not going to melt as quickly because you have the soil as an insulator.
Right.
Plus, that's true. Everybody, I'm sorry, Alice.
I was going to say, plus you have whatever's holding that soil, which is additional weight. It's a wood container or metal container or...
I was thinking more of just, you know, putting drainage fabric and geotextile fabric over your entire roof and just filling it up like the Brooklyn Grange with dirt.
Right, right.
Which, if you had a structure strong enough, does, however, introduce other technical issues such as how do you drain the water, which eventually will percolate through the soil off of the roof because you don't want standing water. For a variety of reasons. One, it's because standing water, if there are any low spots, could attract mosquitoes, which we do have in the New York metropolitan area with their West Nile problems. And it's also just a concentrated dead load, which we would prefer to drain away. We would prefer to have the water freely draining across that roof membrane because water on old-fashioned tar paper roof.
It's going to break it down. And
yes, it's going to cause it to degrade.
So how do you determine, Curtis, if people often ask us, how much can my roof bear? How do you go about doing that to determine how much weight it can support to begin with?
It depends on the structure. If it's a loft building, a concrete loft building, we would have to take core samples of the concrete structure, possibly using ground penetrating radar, which sounds very high tech, but actually it is more common than you think, to scan to see how much reinforcing is in the reinforced concrete structure, and working with optimally with a structural engineer and not an architect,
right,
to determine the ultimate stress of that structure. If it is, say, in Park Slope, and it's a row house with brick common walls on either side and wood joists or beams going across in that roof plane, we would have to open up the ceiling of the top floor, examine the condition, the size, the species of the wood that was used as joists, and calculate its probable load-bearing capacity.
Right.
That's something that an architect is competent to handle, wood construction, within the parameters vaguely laid out by the insurance companies.
And landmarks, potentially.
Well, potentially landmarks might want to see the structural calculations, indeed. Although, in some cases, if you're not putting cabanas on your roof, I don't know that landmarks necessarily has jurisdiction. If you just want to have some Kentucky bluegrass up there.
Yeah, yeah.
How much do you need, my question for you, how much do you need to support sod? How much soil?
Well, some people have said as little as 3 to 4 inches minimally, but I think you need more than that. I think it's more like 6. And it also depends on the soil, the kind of soil.
The mix that you're using.
That you use.
Yeah.
Have you encountered this strange thing called engineered soil?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We were going to talk about that. But let's say you find out that your roof can only hold, you know,
30 pounds.
30 pounds. Are there ways to get around that? How can you have a green roof and put more weight up there? What are the things that could be done?
Well, you could open up the ceiling and expose those joists. And we have to quickly try to do in like 45 seconds a primer on structural engineering. You could double or triple up the roof joists. So if you have a 2x8 that's spanning 20 feet or 25 feet, 2x8 at 25 feet is probably not bearing your 30 pounds in the first place. But you could double or triple up the roof joists. Of course, that does require that you have to connect those joists positively with mechanical fasteners to the side walls. You can't just take a single stick of wood that's 2x8 or 2x10
and set it on top of
and sister up two more joists without, here's where the structural engineering comes in, looking at the end reactions, because the load has to be carried back to the side walls through fully bearing connections, not relying on just that original joist, because otherwise that additional bearing capacity, the bending capacity,
it's going to buckle, right?
No, well, will cause the ends of the original joist to start to crush. And although older wood, I know this becomes a bit arcane, but those of your listeners who are interested can find out some things about this by doing their Google searches. We don't want to put
Build a roof garden on Wikipedia.
Or in SketchUp. Yeah, you don't want to stress the original joists so that they start to crush. You want to connect the additional joists into the sidewalls so that this entire load comes down on your, mostly probably if it's an older building, brick sidewalls.
Right. Okay, we did this in Park Slope, and we actually put a beam across an existing beam so that the load
to carry the load.
Yeah.
A nice big heavy ledger beam.
And then we did a whole deck on top of it, and we actually did 3 beams and then a deck on top of it. And
you
then
could
we
do
did
that. Now, you could do that in the ceiling space of the top floor. or you could do it as an upset beam condition above the existing
yeah,
roof.
Yeah, I was going to say that floating, you can kind of ignore the roof in a way.
And build a whole nother structure that bear it, so long as it bears firmly on your sidewalls.
Mm-hmm.
Next, then you have to look at the bearing capacity of your sidewalls.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want any multiplex theaters sitting on ancient brick without looking at the condition of the brick, the condition of the mortar. Have leaks degraded the condition of the brick coming down
right.
over the years?
Right.
Because not all brick is created equal.
Well, and you also have to think about your neighbors below you, that they're going to be affected by this. So if you're in a condo and you have the top space and you think, this is what I'm going to do on my roof.
Well, primarily you want to make sure that you are not introducing opportunity for leaks
compromise.
Into the building.
Yes. Right.
In
yes.
which case you are, no, we're not. So, well, you're screwed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to take a break. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back with Curtis Taylor. Right now, we're going to listen to
Wayne.
Oh, Curtis Wayne.
I'm sorry, Curtis Taylor. Sorry, he's
That's
a photographer.
Okay.
Curtis Wayne.
Curtis B. Wayne Architect.
Curtis
Thank
B.
You.
Wayne Architect. We're listening to the Innocence Mission Rooftop.
Welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are here with Curtis B. Wayne talking about load and members. What a sexy show,
load.
Alice.
Load. Love to say the word load.
Load and members. Curtis, tell us more about ways that we can...
The live load.
Live load.
Live load.
That's what I'm interested in, Curtis. No, I want to know
the live load.
And members.
Now, another great way to be able to sustain... a more robust live load.
Damn.
Is to get into steel. Man of steel. It's called a flitch plate.
Mm-hmm.
If you have
Go on.
If you you make a steel sandwich. You take quarter inch pieces of long pieces of steel and you make a sandwich. You take the original joist and you put steel on the other side and then you put more wood on the other side, and you have to still be respectful of the end reactions to bring that
right.
load down. But steel, because it has a bending stress of an effective bending stress of 22,000 pounds per square inch in bending, as opposed to even an ancient wood member that might be 1,600.
Wow.
Is order of magnitude much, much, much stronger.
Right.
That can be done, and it can be very effective. But that means taking down your ceiling and with a lot of fuckery at the side walls. And another approach is to build a secondary structure above the roof. Let the roof just drain.
Mm-hmm.
Let the surface of this new structure be slatted like a boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Let the water and the rain and the snow fall through and drain as they previously had. And that can be done in a variety of ways. You can do it with timber, with 2x10, 2x12 joists. You can do it with rolled sections of steel, but the drawback of that is that you might have to rent a crane to hoist it up to your roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done that a couple of times. We've had to.
You can also do it with what's called cold rolled sections. They're like, if you've ever had cause to walk through a modern high rise under construction, you'll see that all of the wall studs are rolled light gauge steel. Mm-hmm. Now, we can take that same technology in a heavier gauge of steel, like 16 gauge steel, which is an eighth of an inch thick. They roll it into a section. It's a looks like a C in cross section. And those CJ or cold roll joists can be easily, because a 20 or 25 foot piece of cold rolled 16 gauge stud weighs 5 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Easily humped upstairs if you have a row house. Easily mm-hmm. taken up, and it's carpentry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a little bit more tedious carpentry than working with wood, because you have the steel is hard to cut. It's a little slower to connect with high strength tech screws and things like that. But a structure like that, if it is properly then primed and painted and made rust proof,
mm-hmm.
could easily sit above your roof, bearing your Ipe wood or even your Trex planking upon which you could have pots and planters and big hot. You could do that.
Yeah.
Above, however, because that is a structure that rises above the level of your roof, it is likely to require, whether anyone notices it or not, that you should go through the building department, and then the Landmarks Commission would want to see whether you could see this from
the street
level.
Right.
Are you respecting the sky plane requirements, which are zoning requirements that make sure that you're not causing shadows on the street?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that can be done.
Let's get into that a little bit more about the building codes and fire codes with relationship to roof gardens.
Well, in most cases, the basics of zoning are that lots are zoned for floor area ratio, which means that you cannot build, you may build up to a certain multiplier of the footprint of your lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be in a FAR where there's FAR of 6, which means that if you have a 15,000 square foot plot, you can build 6 times that in terms of total building area.
Mm-hmm.
There are also restrictions as to how much clear area you must have in the rear yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this thing called the sky plane, which goes up to a certain height, and then there's an angle, and you may not add building area within that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a permanently enclosed structure adds to your FAR.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot just blithely go and add a sauna or cabanas that are occupiable in 4 seasons without respecting the zoning code, because permanent structural additions, regardless of how they are undertaken, are subject to the zoning code.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where finding a licensed architect to help you with that can be essential, so that you do not, as a building owner, go and spend $60,000 or $70,000 and find that
you can't do this.
And you must remove it.
Mm-hmm. We've been on that side of the coin too, where we've had to actually deconstruct gardens that were not filed properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And haul them away, and those are sad days.
It was a nice party while that lasted.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was temporary.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was sad because people invest so much money. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about fire code and roof gardens.
Well, in New York City,
yeah.
materials that are fastened to the building have to have a certain fire resistance.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we like using steel.
Mm-hmm. Pavers?
Well, pavers have to be non-combustible.
Mm-hmm.
Wood materials have to have what's called a Class A
rating, yeah.
Of surface combustibility, which really just evolves to, it doesn't burn any faster than white oak as a cladding material.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use almost any material if it has been treated to be fire retardant.
Mm-hmm.
However, in terms of if you were just building a deck on which you were having a few potted containers, you could probably use Trex, which is a composite material made out of wood chips that's embedded in plastic, because it's a wearing material. It's an underfoot material, and I think that I'm pretty sure that Trex at least is as good as a Class A trim material.
But you know, it's interesting because we use Ipe. That's like the hot wood now.
But Ipe is such a hard wood.
It has the Class A fire rating.
It does.
But the buildings department still, they're very resistant to give approvals. And then there's the 20% rule, right, of how much
of that you
material
can
you can have.
Yeah, well.
So it kind of depends on who you get at the building department sometimes.
Yeah, I imagine that Brooklyn's harder than Manhattan.
Yeah.
Because it's just a matter of becoming accustomed to having seen this stuff before.
Yeah.
But then Ipe in itself is not a cure-all. It's a very difficult wood to work.
Yeah, it's very, very heavy.
Very hard.
Yeah.
Very heavy.
Has to be pre-drilled.
Its that's common right. name is ironwood. I mean, that's a reason.
Yeah.
We actually did a show about teak on our show a couple of weeks ago.
Teak is bad. Teak is good luck finding any forest stewardship account. FSC
well,
rated
we did.
Teak.
We did. That's why you should listen to our show.
Where? In Costa Rica?
It's diamond teak. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, that's
teak
another
is great, but you have to oil teak.
Yes, you do.
Or it dries out.
Yes, you do.
People who have sailboats would know that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about green roofs as opposed to roof gardens, which we've spent most of the show on. Green roofs, there's two basic types. There's intensive and extensive. So why don't you, Curtis, as an architect, explain...
Define those terms.
Those terms.
Oh, gee, I don't know. I'd rather put you on the spot. I think about intensive is maybe 6 inches of soil, and extensive is maybe up to 3 feet of soil.
Exactly.
Are we talking sedums, or are we talking...
Trees.
Trees.
And shrubs,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think from an architectural point of view, there are really only two considerations as to whether you're going to be extensive or intensive. And one is, what do you want it to look like?
Mm-hmm. How are you going to use the space?
Two is, how are you going to irrigate it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm so glad that you brought that up, Curtis, because I think a lot of people think that making a green roof is like just transplanting the prairie up into their roof, and then they don't have to do anything.
Yeah, but not all plants will live up there without some maintenance and some water.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have a lawn and plant it with ryegrass, and if you have a really hot and dry summer, it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just have a bunch of dust blowing around it.
Yeah, which is really
good. And then some ailanthus trees 2 months later in that nice soil. Which could compromise your roof membrane eventually.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I mean, these are trees that grow in cement.
But I'm sure that when you do it, even in an intensive garden, you have a drainage mat, and geotextile fabric, and a barrier board over the geotextile fabric.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to keep those roots from getting down into the waterproofing membrane of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Which is important, and all of these things will have meaning to your listeners when they go and they do a little research on their own, so they understand, oh yes, and it's for the uninitiated client, sometimes it's difficult to explain why it's important to do it the right way, but it must be done the right way, because otherwise the roots will start to get in between, even if you have a really nice multiply, you know, for want of a better term, tar paper or built-up roof, mm-hmm. the little root structures will get in between, and they will delaminate the roof, mm-hmm. and you will start having little drip, 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 and it may be dripping over here, but the leak may be over 15 feet over there, mm-hmm. and that's a horror, because then you have to remove the planting material.
Yep.
And good luck.
Yeah. Especially with ones that aren't. Now there's a couple of many different companies doing it, of course, but there's like tray systems as well as
I kind of like the tray systems.
I do. We do too. We actually prefer that because I feel like you can access pieces of the roof if you need to.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's an intensive system. But then you can always have a planter that's got almost
a bigger
like a raised bed garden.
Right, like a puzzle piece almost, so you can get both systems.
So we talked about turf, and you think that 6 inches is probably what you need overall for the assembly of drainage and soil.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's important to have that drainage layer.
Yeah, and you got to give that plant, you know, a foundation and a basis to establish a root base. 4 inches, I mean, you're going to get brown spots, and you're going to be fussing all the time unless you have a good root base.
Now, have you put deciduous trees on roofs?
Sure, we do it all the time.
In containers.
And what are good deciduous trees for a roof in the New York area?
Amelanchiers, serviceberry.
Russian olive.
Crabs.
We've put all kinds of... we've put in
birches,
river birches that can take the heat more than the classic sort of northern species.
Uh-huh. Maples.
We've been successful with that. Even Japanese maples. It really comes down to irrigation and proper soil and root space.
Uh-huh.
If you can support it with the right watering and good soil, we have one garden that is, you know, 25 years old, and these trees are living.
These,
proof,
yeah, and know? These planters are like 18 by 18 by 15. They're boxes, and we have 25-year-old trees.
So what's good soil? Do you like clay or not?
No. No.
I like clay because it absorbs water, and then it holds it.
But it there's not good percolation and water drainage, though, through the clay. So we actually prefer a mix of a lightweight potting soil and an organic compost.
We put a lot of compost in containers.
And a lot of times, also, we will build a container that has a false bottom that is basically the first, you know, from the bottom up, the first 3 to 4 inches, 5 inches, is packing peanuts with landscape fabric so that there's adequate drainage.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about vermiculite.
Yeah.
To make your soil more lightweight.
Yeah.
We mix it ourselves on site, usually, Curtis, because we like a certain mixture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's lots of products that are already pre-mixed, but we like to make it kind of specific to the plant species that we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll add or subtract compost based on, like, if we're doing a huge herb garden, we put less compost. If we're doing deciduous trees, we put more.
Okay, so my next question is, what about Lumbricus terrestris? Do you insert earthworms?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah,
we find them there. I mean, we don't insert. I've never insert them, but
certainly.
I think as an aeration thing, it would be almost a given that you would have to.
Yeah,
well, insert some worms.
We've never done worms, but we've certainly have introduced ladybugs and you know, into gardens and praying mantis and
the compost that we get. Probably has some earth. We end up, like, you know, six months or a year later, they're in there already. And it's quite astounding to see that up on a roof, you know?
Yeah. So if you want to, unfortunately, we're getting to the end of our show.
Your shows are too short.
And we're just getting into the plant part, which is fun.
We'll have to do up on the roof, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could do
that. We'll have you back, Curtis.
Well, so this is why I do an hour-long show.
Because
you know, it's
just
like
when you start to get into it.
Start going, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. You were listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network, and our guest was Curtis B. Wayne, who also has a show called
Burning Down the House, Wednesdays Eastern Time here at Heritage Radio Network.
Maybe next time we'll be on your show.
Yes, maybe we'll do From Your Roof to Green Roof as part of Burning Down the House.
Yeah, that sounds great.
But you'll have to be prepared to speak for an hour.
We can do it.
Can you do it?
We can definitely do it.
All right. Next time with beer.
Okay. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network and We Dig Plants. Thanks to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and to TechServe as our sponsor. The show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. Join us on Facebook, Groundworks Inc., We Dig Plants. We'd love your feedback, and we'll be posting some great resources for rooftop gardening. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Curtis. Have a good
Thank
day.
Thank you.